Hi, Chief Halton here at Fire Engineering Podcasts, and we are being brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and their Made for Life podcast hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life podcast unearths the work experiences of real men and women who rely on the protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel, recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life podcast from Tenkata Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And thank you for listening to Fire Engineering.
Welcome to this encore presentation of Pride and Ownership, the Love for the Job. This episode originally ran on July 20th of 2009. Please enjoy.
Welcome to Fire Engineering Radio and to our show, Pride and Ownership, the Love for the Job. I'm your host, Chief Rick Lasky, and our last show we had Dr. Harry Carter. It's Dr. Harry Carter. He's Chief Harry Carter, but he's Brother Harry Carter to me because he's a fellow Mason, and what a great show, and talking about the relationship and the parallels between being a brother Mason and a brother firefighter, and it's just what an incredible. If you haven't heard that one yet, go back and listen to it because it's well worth your time. And then we finish it up with just talk about some great stuff about safety and leadership. Hey, if you haven't signed up for Fire Engineering's community page on this site on the website, you need to do it. It's free. It's an incredible resource. The only thing, Chief, if you're a chief out there, once you get your guys in there, you won't get them off, man. There are so many videos and pictures and, you know, blogs and forums and groups. But you know what? It's not who's dating who and who's doing that. This is good stuff. This is the stuff that keeps you alive. This is the stuff that motivates your guys. This is the stuff that it's an incredible page. If you haven't done it yet, you need to get on there and get involved. It's awesome. Even if you just go through and read stuff and look at things, you're going to be better off as a firefighter. I know everybody's going through some tough times with budget. All we keep saying is hang in there, man. There's some horrible, horrible things going on out there. I know there's a lot of really good, incredible fire chiefs doing the best they can to hang on to what they got. For those that don't fall into that category, well, we've talked about that before, but the majority, I'm telling you, are really trying hard, folks. It's tough, man. It's really hard. Just keep your thoughts and your prayers for the brothers and sisters that are going through some rough times and trying to hang on to everything they've got and go from there. You know, this whole thing, right now it's getting really hot outside. I know down in Texas there's been this heat wave going on. I saw it was up in the high 90s in Minnesota. And, you know, this whole thing of calling for help early, I still don't know. We're going to talk with our guest about this today, why people sometimes think they have to be macho and do everything with just a few people. You know, all you're doing is hurting your guys. You know, get them the help they need, even if it just means picking up hose for them. They got, you know, if they're a volunteer, they got more calls to go to, I'm sure. If they're paid, they got the rest of the shift to work. It's called taking care of your people. So don't be afraid to go along and do the right thing for your folks. And lastly, take a look at what Paul Combs is doing. If you haven't seen the website with anybody that's in a fire service right now that reads anything has seen Paul's work. It's the cartoon drawings. I'm just going to say it. Hopefully Penwell is going to get him to do a book. They need to get him to do a book to put on. I've never seen anybody have the effect of saving firefighters' lives and protecting them through artwork. It's an incredible concept. Some of them, I mean, you end up laughing. Some of them have, for me, it's the message that, you know, I look at it, I go, wow. And then about 10 minutes later, I go, hey, he was talking about me. And it just kind of bumps you on the nose and says you need to be safe, you need to take care of things. And he addresses some pretty tough issues in a way that you have to look at them, you have to talk about them. So take a look at Paul Combs' work. It's incredible, and hopefully we can get Penwell to do a book with him. We get all his stuff out where it needs to be and making just that much more of a difference. Hey, today we got another great guest on the show. One of my buddies and one of my brothers, this guy has had for me. He's one of my heroes. There's a reason why his picture is in my book, and I'm not trying to embarrass him or make him feel, you know, kind of funny talking about him like this, but Dave McGrail is a district chief with the Denver, Colorado Fire Department, and when we were putting Saving Our Own together, and after we got it going, we kept adding to the program, and one day Chief John Norman, then Lieutenant Norman or Captain Norman, walked in and threw the Fire Engineering magazine down on the cover. It was the April 1993 issue, and it had the picture of a fallen firefighter, a firefighter who died on the cover. And he said, you know, they couldn't get him out. We got to look at this. We got to see how and what rings out in my head, in my brain, if you will. And if you know John Norman, he's just an incredible leader and fire service professional. I love John. He's another mentor of mine. Is the fact that he said, this isn't the first time we haven't been able to get someone, you know, out of a situation similar to this. This means we have to do something. And a lot of people are upset with Bill Manning because they thought that the picture was real. They thought, you know, how dare you put a dead brother on the cover like that, not knowing it was a reenactment, and at the request of and then Captain Dave McGrail with the Denver Colorado Fire Department and his co-author on trying to get the word out on a tragedy he had involving an engineer, Mark Langvart. And, you know, all too often there are departments out there that suffer a loss, suffer a tragedy, and they sweep under the carpet or they don't talk about it. They feel like someone's going to say something. It's like they're airing their dirty laundry, and nothing could be further than the truth. I mean, the only way we're going to keep people from falling into that same situation or help them avoid it is by talking about it. You know, this is a particular fire where these are good brothers and sisters, heroic. They couldn't get a fellow firefighter out of a situation. That has happened thousands of times. But this time a leader, this time a true fire service brother stood up and said, look, I want to share this with the fire service, the world, and just say, look, do something. Try not to let this happen because this broke our hearts. And that's what it comes down to. And I wish more fire departments would do what Chief McGrail did. Now, real quick, Dave's been in the fire service. He's been with Denver and in the fire service for over 27 years. He's been in some of the busiest engine companies, actually Engine 3, one of the busiest, and then Rescue Company 1 with Denver. He's got all kinds of specialties and topics that he teaches on, but the one we just actually had him out here, and he did a great job for us, was just engine operations, stamp-up operations. You know, he specializes in high-rise firefighting. He's been all over the world. He's been to Singapore. He's doing work up in Canada on high-rise operations. He's the lead instructor for the engine company stamp-pipe operation class for FDIC at Indy and all the other FDICs we've had. He's on the FDIC Educational Advisory Board, which I proudly serve on as well, and he's an editorial advisor for the magazine. He's the author, and if you don't have this book in your firehouse library, you need to go out and get it because we put it in all our firehouses, is of firefighting operations in high-rise and standpipe-equipped buildings. And it's one of those books that you could open up and put to work immediately. It's not like you have to do a research paper. You open it up, it's one of those that from the newest to the most senior firefighter can follow it. It's incredible. And with that, I want to welcome him to the show. Dave, welcome, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Rick.
Oh, pal. You know, and the guys are still talking about the class that you did here. I wish we could have had you longer. We had you for 2 4-hour sessions. But, you know, let me just move from that. I get more work out of your keynote at FDIC this year was incredible, first off, buddy. You did an incredible job. But your whole message, I've told more people lately, when we do the leadership and I do pride and ownership, I go, you know, you need to listen to what Dave had to say. Go to the website, because when he just your thought about going out and saving someone and not necessarily grabbing them and dragging them out of a building, save, you know, attitude, career, it was an incredible message, buddy. It really was.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. It means a lot coming from you. I hope that the message was received by a lot of people. Certainly meant what I said.
The feedback was incredible, pal. You're and you know what? That's one thing. You're sincere. You're passionate, and you know what? Tell me a little bit. I know a lot about you, but I some of our listeners may not. In the way of your background, what got you into the fire service and started off your career, and what who got you interested?
Well, you know, I'm my story is one that certainly a lot of guys have heard before. I'm just a kid from Denver whose dad was a fireman. And from my earliest recollection, I just wanted to be a fireman just like him. My dad, Pat McGrail, is a retired division chief of operations from the Denver Fire Department. He did 42 years on the Denver Fire Department. Started in 55, worked till 97, and you know, he was 8 years on the job when I was born, but once again, from my earliest recollection, you know, I wanted to be a fireman on the Denver Fire Department, and I wanted to be just like that man, Pat McGrail. And I was fortunate, I guess, through maybe a little bit of hard work and a lot of divine intervention, that I finally got hired on the Denver Fire Department, and I've been living my dream ever since. And it's just, you know, it's, as you know, the greatest job in the world, and I'm on the fire department that I want to be on. And I'm basically literally getting to follow in my dad's footsteps, who he's the person that I think is the greatest firefighter I've ever known, and learned so much from him, and I still learn from him on a daily basis. For Father's Day, we just bought him a brand new scanner because of the 800 megahertz in Denver, and because of the Democratic National Convention, they scrambled our channels up really good, so nobody could really receive the radio transmissions. So there's a new scanner out there that I got him that receives the radio transmissions now. So he's able to, I guess, live vicariously through me. And as a young kid growing up, I lived a little bit vicariously through him. And then there was a period of time where we got to work together and go to some fires together. But
how cool is that?
That's the main reason that I got into it, just following my dad's footsteps.
Well, Dave, and for those that have met Dave's dad, he's I don't know. I guess the easiest way to describe him is he's a class act. He's an incredible, just a wonderful person and a mentor. And I mean, one of those people, as soon as you meet him, you like him. He's just a, you know what, the kind of chief, Dave, I would have loved to have worked for, buddy. But let me ask you this about your dad and all the years watching him do what he did and then being able to come on the same department. If you could pick one lesson or one piece of advice he gave you, you know, dad to son or chief to firefighter even though, you know what I'm saying, could you pick something? I know there's probably a ton of things. If you were to zoom in on just one, what did your dad give you? What did he hand off to you as that gold nugget from him to you?
Well, you know, it's probably kind of a reoccurring theme and something I use in a lot of my presentations. But, you know, he really helped me, I think, establish and develop the mindset that I have for the job. A lot of it has to do with some of what you talked about in the beginning and that calling for help early and that sort of thing. But the quote that I use in many of my presentations that my dad gave me, and I think about it, literally think about it, when I'm pulling out of the firehouse in the buggy on the way to a run, especially on the way to a fire, and that is, he said many years ago to me, the most important fire you'll ever go to is the one you're at right now. And, you know, I think about those events that you and I know about, whether it's the incident that claimed Mark Langbart's life or other line-of-duty death incidents on the Denver Fire Department or case studies that we look at from across the American Fire Service. And you think of how many firefighters probably, you know, sit back and think, geez, I wish we could have that night back. I wish we could have that night back and do that over again. He's helped me develop a mindset to where it's front end loaded in terms of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it, based on, hey, this could be and it is the most important fire you'll ever go to. Treat it as such, and I believe that you end up doing things that it'd be impossible to quantify firefighters' lives saved, but I believe that we do things on the front end through good habit based firefighting that certainly prevents firefighter injuries and line of duty deaths. So he's just really given me a good mindset through that quote of the most important fire you'll ever go to is the one you're at right now.
Well, Dave, so many young firefighters are always talking about going to the big one and going, oh, you know, we need to go to a job, and I love that excitement. You and I both been there with the enthusiasm ourselves, and I think you reach that point in your career, and I talk about, it's that maturity, not a boo-boo. It's that fire service maturity that you get to a point where, you know, you're still stoked about going to the job, but all of a sudden now tactics and strategy and all that stuff come. You get there and you're looking at the header and you're still excited about going to work, the thrill of fighting a fire. But there's another side to things that you never, when you were a kid, you just looked up, let's go, you know. Now there's still that in you, but you've applied that other side to it. And I don't think, if you only have people riding a seat, Dave, that can't do that for you, I think that's where we get hurt. Have you ever seen, I mean, how many times, and I know we're jumping ahead here, and I want to pick your brain a few things that I even heard you say here, and I've listened to you so many times. I've heard you say and talk about the little things, how they add up, and we've talked about that, sweating the small stuff. Is it often the big stuff or the little stuff that gets us hurt and killed on the fire ground?
Well, you know, it's certainly both, but more often than not, it's some of the little things.
Yeah.
And, you know, our last line of duty death was Lieutenant Rich Montoya, and it was just a tragedy of all tragedies because Rich has a son on the job. Lieutenant Eric Carrasco is Rich's son. Eric has children, Rich's grandchildren. Certainly Rich's wife he leaves behind, and Rich was 15 work shifts away from retirement.
Oh, man.
His date retired.
How many times have you heard that before?
15 work shifts away, and Rich was killed in a 1,200-square-foot single-family dwelling, and it's the type of place that you, I think most firefighters, if they were to look at that house before the fire and since that building has been rehabbed and it doesn't look like there was a fire there at all now. But you look at that house, it's a pretty benign-looking building. And so certainly it is the little stuff that can get us in trouble. And you hit the nail on the head. I believe that, you know, on a daily basis, whether it's in your department in Louisville or here in Denver or where it is across the fire service, most of what we do on a daily basis is stuff that turns out to be something that is less than an emergency in our eyes. We go to a lot of calls that turn out to be, like you say, not the big one. To me, that's our opportunity to practice. That's when we can practice, the way we're supposed to be doing it. And obviously there's little things that I focus a lot of attention on, whether it be, you know, good elevator discipline. But in the city of Denver, on a daily basis, there are countless automatic alarms in high-rise buildings, and certainly most of which turn out to be some sort of non-emergency, whether it's a system malfunction or a steam scare or a smoke scare, whatever the case may be. But that's our opportunity to practice, to put our gear on, to do it the way we would really do it, to stop that elevator two floors below, to get out, to walk up, evaluate that floor below, get up to the actual location of the alarm. And 9 times out of 10, there's a red light on a detector, and it doesn't turn out to be anything. But it's our opportunity to practice. And one of my mentors on the Denver Fire Department is a fellow by the name of Phil Miller. He's a lieutenant on Engine Company 3. And he talks about how athletes have a muscle memory, and he really correlates that to the fire service in terms of how firefighters build a muscle memory as well, in terms of what we do and how we do it. And if it's a good muscle memory, the night that we really have the big one, as you say, that muscle memory that we fall back on is muscle memory that is going to carry us through and give us a successful operation. So, we have to be involved in that habit-based firefighting, and habit-based firefighting is based on the habits that we build on a daily basis at our mini incidents that don't turn out to be major emergencies, at least in our eyes.
Well, and Dave, you that is exactly, I mean, you hit it right on the head with the whole muscle, mind, memory thing. It's getting guys, sometimes they don't understand what you tell them. I need you to size up every time. I need you to size up the right way every time. I need you to get off with your tools. I need you to get off. And there's two things as you're talking about that pop up into my head immediately. Rich Collins, you know, you've met Rich, one of my buddies and fellow instructor, and Rich is the chief in Osceola County, Florida. We worked together at Darien Woodridge, and we had a gas explosion, Dave, at a single-family dwelling. Ended up with two fatalities, one critical, damaged like 41 homes, destroyed three. And Rich Collins was the newly promoted lieutenant on the engine that was like two blocks away. I think it knocked him out of bed. He pulled up, and as he pulled up, this is 11:30, they have fire, they've got buildings destroyed, they got debris everywhere, but, you know, some dead folks, everything, you know, injured people, just unbelievable. He pulls up, Darien Woodridge engine 621's out, I've got a single-family dwelling with... And he says, and he stops. He goes, "Oh, it's gone. It's all gone. Go ahead, give me a box." And I said, "Stage for the box is 63rd Pershing in the Target parking lot. We're going to work." And it was kind of funny because he doesn't remember saying that, Dave. It just all clicked. He did that, called the box, you know, went to the next level without even knowing it, because that's what we practice. And that's the first one. The other one is Jay Jonas's story, now Deputy Chief Jonas from FDNY, about the World Trade Center, Dave, with, you know, the miracle of Six Truck, when, you know, the guys were like, well, we need to get rid of our tools, and he's like, no, we need to hang on to them, and, you know, we never know we're gonna need them, and lo and behold, there they are needing them later. It's those little things you're talking about that make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely, and I'd never heard it put in an opposite fashion until I heard you use that phrase. Yes, sweat the small stuff, because, you know, so often you hear people in different fire service organizations, geez, I really like working for that guy. He's laid back. He doesn't sweat the small stuff. And any time I hear a statement like that made about an officer, that's a guy that I'm going to be a little bit skeptical of, especially when they say, no, I like working for him. He's laid back. And to me, what that usually means is it's probably somebody that isn't doing their job. And certainly doesn't mean that you have to be a tyrant or an ogre, but yeah, we do have to sweat the small stuff. And one of the things that I've probably gained a reputation for on the Denver Fire Department as a district chief is, if I see firefighters coming up to an incident and they don't have their waist belt on their SCBA buckled, it really irritates me. And I'll bring that officer over to the command post and say, you know, I want to put your company to work at this fire, but I'm not going to if your guys are dressed like that. And I, you know, I try to, when I have the opportunity after the incident's over or whatever, let them know, listen, if you're engaged in the fire service, you'll know that there are case studies out there where firefighters become entrapped inside of a fire building based on their own stuff, a dangling waist belt, whatever the case may be. There's a method to the madness, and there's a reason why I want guys to show up dressed properly, ready to go to work, and not become part of the problem, be part of the solution. So it's important for us to sweat the small stuff, absolutely.
Well, and it's just simple things. I'm the same way about the waist belt. It's that tongue gets hung up under door thresholds. We get tangled up on box springs. There's all kinds of things. It's like, you know what? It's like bringing a flashlight. When we talk about sweating the small stuff, Dave, and you and I do it all the time, there was a book written years ago, not to knock the book. It's a good book for the business community, for the private sector, said don't sweat the small stuff because it's all small stuff. Well, with us, it's often the small stuff, and I know you're going to hit on some of the stuff later. I want to steal your thunder with the engine company operations. But it's the small stuff that got us in trouble in the first place, or certainly, you know, three or four different little things. And Dave, the people you talked about, and I know exactly what you're talking about, the guys that get off the rig without their stuff or half-dressed or take it like this is nothing are the ones you always see running out of the building, going back to get their stuff, or not. All of a sudden, it's the real deal. And we've had too many all of a sudden it's the real deal line-of-duty deaths. We've been caught short. And all I expect from my guys, Dave, and I've told them, you were here, you saw, they could be playing ping pong right now, sitting in the chairs. I don't care. My guys work their asses off for me. When the bell rings, I want their game face on. I don't care if it's the same BS false alarm three times in a row. Every time you go out the door, you go into a fire. When you get there's no fire unless we say there's no fire. There's nobody in the building unless we say there's no one in the building. It's not out unless we say so. End of story. Other than that, we're good, but Dave, your dad, and here's something that I never thought about, buddy, before when I talk about the passion of the job. Your dad had to go through this when you got on the job, buddy, because when you sit there and you ask guys how many firefighters, how many, you know, have a son or daughter, they're on the job, they're so proud, they're so excited, and then all of a sudden that shiver runs up their spine when they sit there and think, who's my son Dave working with tonight? Who, if he gets turned around in that single family dwelling at 2 in the morning, is his officer going to be able to get him out? Or is he one of those laid-back guys that just signs the drill book, doesn't make them carry their tools? Do you agree with me? I mean, is that kind of scary?
Absolutely. My children are young, so I don't know whether I'll ever experience that same thing that my dad has experienced and other firefighters who have kids that come on the job. But absolutely, I thought about that, I guess, in a sense from, just an empathetic sense of, geez, if I had a kid on the job, here's who I want him to be working with. And I'll tell you what, if he happened to be working for this guy, that's going to make me a little bit nervous.
Oh, it's scary.
I hope they end up with the right people, that's for sure.
Oh, it just the thought of who my son or daughter is going to be crawling into that burning building with when things go wrong, because it doesn't happen slowly. It happens really fast and quick when shit happens. It just, you know, it happens, and it's hard to fix it, and you've got to be able to react, and you need good leaders in there with you that take the job seriously. I mean, look, Dave, I mentioned before, and again, I don't ever mean to raise you up any higher than you already are in my life to embarrass you, but what you've done for the fire service, and we've talked about this before, where, you know, we wish more people would share an experience, even though it may have been a tragic one, to try and help other people. You know, the military does it. A lot of other folks do it. We need to get better at it. But what you did with who was your co-author on the article again for Mark Langvart?
It was Captain Jack Rogers from the fire department.
Dave, and I've said it everywhere I go, and every class I teach, whenever it comes up, because it does, every single Pride and Ownership class I teach, I get to a point where I talk about you, and I put the magazine cover up there, and I can say it with confidence, not with a guess, and I'm being modest with this number. There are literally hundreds of firefighters that are alive today because of what you two captains wrote about. Not saying, these are brave people. Denver, Colorado's got an incredible reputation of fire service for everything, not just firefighting, for specialized rescue. You know, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to talk to anybody and find anything negative. In fact, I've never have about Denver. You hear good stuff. They're good folks. They fight fire. They take care of their people. But your willingness to share that story, I know personally, in fact, I have a statue I'm looking at right now, Dave, on my desk, of a firefighter holding another firefighter, his arms was down, that was given to three of us that taught Saving Our Own class, that used the technique that we came up with what you shared with us. I'm looking at it right now. That is a result, and that firefighter was alive because they said what they learned in the class that we were able to put together with John Norman because of what you shared is alive today. And I, you know, it's not airing dirty laundry. It's oh my God. And I'll say it just like this, because I can't, it's my show. The Denver, Colorado Fire Department and Dave McGrail are making a difference in the lives of firefighters because they were willing to share. Do you, when you travel, do people come up and talk to you about the impact or just, you know, of that whole incident?
Yeah, you know, every now and then you do get some stuff on it, and it's interesting. And at the time, I was actually a lieutenant at the time, and Jack Rogers was a captain in our safety and training division. And I go way back with Jack as well. I mean, for all practical purposes, he's kind of like an uncle to me, because he was one of the firefighters that worked for my dad on Rescue 1. You know, in the Warriors, so to speak, when they were going on a lot of runs into a lot of fires. So I go way back with Jack, and as it turns out, you know, Jack was actually one of my lieutenants as a training lieutenant when I started on the fire department in the academy. But for me, the Langvart thing was, you know, it was an absolutely new experience to me, and really a new experience to an entire generation of firefighters, because our department had gone, you know, a long period of time, 17 years without a line of duty death. And this incident happened with Mark Langvart in that fire building on South Broadway. And to be honest with you, looking back on it, I suppose, you know, I was relatively new on the job and I was a brand new lieutenant. I was probably more naive than anything else, because it was just, it just seemed like common sense to me that, geez, we should take a real close look at this. We should thoroughly and comprehensively investigate it, and most importantly, we should share this information with the fire service, because the information that gets out there could potentially save a firefighter's life somewhere down the line. And that, being a little bit naive about that, I didn't realize. And I certainly realize that now, many years later, but I didn't realize at the time that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people, including some people within my own organization, that are going to resent this, and they're going to resent it forever. And they're, you know, you don't always get that to your face, and you don't always know what it is, but I've certainly learned over the years that some people have certainly tried to pay back, so to speak, for what they thought was maybe an inappropriate thing to do, and that was, in their mind's eyes, airing our dirty laundry. I certainly wouldn't do anything differently, but I know now I'm certainly not naive in terms of when you do talk about something. And one of the more contemporary issues is the fire that claimed the life of Lieutenant Rich Montoya. And once again, it's something that happened in my organization. This is something we should look at comprehensively, thoroughly investigate. What happened? What could we do differently? A lot of people don't want to hear that. So I was naive at the time. I wouldn't do anything differently. And I tell firefighters, including yourself, we can't quantify the number of firefighters' lives saved through things like that, through what you have done over the past many years. We can't quantify firefighters' lives saved, but we know that firefighters are alive today because of some of these things that the good people in the fire service have done.
Well, you look at what Phoenix did with Brett Tarver, with that tragedy. You look at when people there, and there have been several that have followed suit. That, you know, and Dave, sometimes it takes someone willing to have the guts, and at the risk of alienating maybe a couple of people, think it was the air in a dirty laundry thing. You and I have talked about this before, and being able, I don't know, maybe that was the first step. And some people, Dave, we've talked about this many times when we've been sitting around having dinner and that after a conference. Some just don't get it. Some just, you know, whether it's a hurt feeling, they're using that. I mean, you know, I've seen people attack other people in incidents that had nothing really to do with what went on, but they're looking to take their frustration, their hurt out on somebody. So the next best thing is this, or that, but it had an incredible impact on the fire service. We do something here, Dave, called the Line of Duty Death Book Report Drill, where the train officer will give a fatality to a different shift at a different station, and their requirement is to take a minimum of 20 minutes and come up with a presentation, a 20-minute presentation minimum. For the rest of their shift, they can do it, Dave, from kitchen table to kitchen table, or they could do the training room, they could do a PowerPoint, or they could do it off the back of a napkin. But they take that fire, they describe and explain to the rest of their shift what happened. You know, line one was here, line two, all this stuff, and the contributing factors. And then the final is they have to explain how we're going to keep that from happening here in Louisville. The rules are you can't make fun of anybody. You can't, because, you know what, things happen and things, you know what I'm saying? It's just, and the stuff that's come out of it, Dave, has been absolutely incredible. And all we're doing is taking the information provided from people like yourself, from the NFPA, from U.S. Fire Administration, NIOSH, and whatever. And now we've got guys, they're bringing them in from other places to talk about that experience they had when they've lost a brother or sister. And I think it's becoming an easier thing. I think when you did it, you know, 93 wasn't that long ago, but it sure was, you know, when you think about where we've come to fire service with RIT and everything. You know, I think that might have been one of the first times someone said, look, this is what happened. You know, don't let it happen to you. Not that anybody did anything wrong. It's, golly, look, we had a struggle. And you and I have taught that class, and we've watched good, strong firefighters struggle with getting a firefighter. And then let's take it further. Let's go away from that particular skill, Dave. Let's talk about just trying to get one up the stairs, getting a downed firefighter up the stairs out of the basement, cellar, let alone out a window, or down a ladder, or whatever. It's not as easy as people think. So what's wrong with practicing it, and what's wrong with talking about, look, this did happen. Hey, we put plaques up on walls, Dave, everywhere we go with guys' names on them. And I think that's a shame that's all we do. We give a flower out every year. We should be taking what happened and not allowing those people to have lost their lives or given up their lives in vain, and take from there what we can to keep other people alive and go, you know what, even though he or she's gone, other people are staying alive because we were able to share what happened and keep other people from you know, walking into that room, falling through that floor, having that wall, whatever the story is. I mean, someone's got to do it, Dave.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, like I said, I certainly wouldn't change a thing about what I did or how I did it. Certainly had an excellent partner with a great deal more experience than I at the time, and that was Captain Jack Rogers that was able to be my co-author in this whole thing. I certainly wouldn't have been able to do it alone. I guess if I had it all to do over again, I would be better prepared for and probably a little bit better able to deal with, you know, some of the resentment that might come out of it. But I'm very comfortable with it, and I have seen in my own world of firefighting two specific situations where the items that really I learned and our department learned from the Langvard incident certainly saved other firefighters' lives. And specifically, you know, as you know, the decade of the 90s was really the decade of RIT, and there was no such thing as RIT or RIC on the Denver Fire Department the night of the Mark Langvard fire. From that was established something that in its early stages was referred to as a safety company that has evolved to our modern-day RIT on the Denver Fire Department. But one of the things that I started early as a young lieutenant on the Denver Fire Department, because you know, I always talk about the dominoes that fall at a fire, and yeah. The last domino that fell for Engineer Mark Langvard was a metal security grate covering a window to the room that he became entrapped in. And literally, obviously there's a number of dominoes involved in that tragedy, but if that one domino was removed, the security grate, if that security grate was off that window, you know, Mark Langvard's alive today as far as I'm concerned. And from that, I developed a thing called RIT Recon many years ago that I've utilized since I became a district chief in 2001. And the RIT Recon really involves a lot of different things. But one of the things that involves is the proactive removal of burglar bars or security grates from windows. And I've had two fires where RIT Recon was proactively performed. Security grates were removed proactively, and firefighters that had to make an emergency egress out of a window were able to, because they were able to go out of an opening that a couple of minutes before their egress was covered up by burglar bars or metal security grates. So I am very happy and proud that, you know, the Denver Fire Department has adopted this RIT Recon, and it's part of our standard operating procedure now. When a RIT company arrives on scene, they're doing that proactive recon 360, doing the things that they can do. And if obviously if they become, if they find themselves in a situation where it becomes much more complex, they're going to need help to do that. We're going to need an additional resource to move up into a formal RIT position. But it's worked out really well for us, and I know that there are firefighters uninjured and alive today because of that proactive RIT Recon, which stems from what we learned from the Langvard incident. So that makes me happy.
And you know what? And I'm gonna make this statement here. First of all, let me ask you this question real quick. How many members do you have in Denver? Total members in a department?
You know, a little under 1,000.
Little under 1,000 members. And I will say it. I think I said it before. Denver has an incredible reputation, great fire department with great people. You know, there's a few sometimes that are just, you know, it's one of those things, Dave. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, and you know, you're going to have a few people that just don't think something should have went the way it did. That's the fire service. But I would say the lion's share, the majority of that fire department, you know, is right on board with it. Obviously, if they adopted that policy, buddy. And I'm looking at a picture, and I've talked to our friend Butchie Cobb, retired from Jersey City, fire engineering, March of 1994, and they're cutting a window grate off of a window, trying to get air pack to it. I believe it was a rookie firefighter in the room next to the fire. This is the same kind of screening, almost identical, Dave, to what you had on that building. You know, the little mesh kind of. And they're right now, I'm looking at them, they're standing on ladders cutting it, and then, you know, Butchie had said, you know, they went through and they did that again where they took the window grates off, and he was immediately out, where this one took a while to get him out. He made it, but out of there, it's a very dramatic photo, you know, March of 94, when you had the April 93, you know, I mean, so already, you know, like you said, there's things happening.
Tune into Fire Engineering's website for part 2 of this podcast.